Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loride. Well, we're going to take a look at some of the big news stories of the past 24 hours, including that protest in Oregon that hasn't gotten much coverage, at least on NPR or anywhere else. We'll talk about that, and we'll get your comments later on in the program as we open up the phone lines today. First, one listener comment about yesterday's program. Yesterday, one of our callers called in to say that Ivanka Trump, the president's daughter, had invested in a company in China that would provide her with voting machines. And although I said to the caller, I believe you, I don't know what your source is. And he called back yesterday with his source.
Rob, this is Jimmy Lyles. That call I made you earlier, and you asked me what was the source. The source is an article in Reuters dated November 6, 2018. The title of the article is China Grants Trademark Approvals for Ivanka Trump Firm, Including Voting Machines. That's Reuters, November 6, 2018.
And we always appreciate sources and facts here on WMNF and try to uphold a pretty high standard. So thank you, Jimmy, for that. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. I'm going to mention a few news stories that have taken place in the last 24 hours and get your response to what you're hearing. And you can respond two ways. One, you can email us here, the address dj@wmnf.org. You can also call us at 813-239-9663. It's a little bit unusual today because Barbara Fling, our phone producer today, our usual Tuesday phone producer, is taking the day off. She's feeling a little under the weather, so our best goes out to Barbara, and hope she feels better soon. So you'll have to let the phone ring until I pick it up. So, again, the number to call, 813-239-9663. Here are some of the stories I think we could talk about. First of all, yesterday, as he was preparing to leave office, U.S. Attorney General William Barr broke with President Trump. And he was asked about Hunter Biden and whether or not the presidential election was stolen. And Barr took notable exception to the positions that the president's been taking. Here's a report from the Associated Press.
Outgoing Attorney General William Barr says he sees no reason for a special counsel to investigate the presidential election and President-elect Joe Biden's son. Barr repeated an earlier statement to the AP he sees no evidence of President Trump's claim of widespread voting fraud.
I see no basis now for seizing machines by the federal government.
Sources tell the AP the president has consulted special counsels on the investigation of Hunter Biden.
I think that it's being handled responsibly and professionally.
That involves the financial dealings of the president-elect's son.
To this point, I have not seen a reason to appoint a special counsel, and I have no plan to do so before I leave.
Barr also broke with the president in reinforcing the belief Russia was behind the cyber espionage operation targeting the U.S. government. Ed Donahue, Washington.
So Barr is going to leave office tomorrow, and his assistant, the assistant attorney general, will take over for the next 28 days or so until the inauguration of the new president. So what do you make of Barr, for the first time in his term in office as the Attorney General, seeming to take a big break from President Trump's positions? Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Well, President Trump does continue to focus his efforts to try to overturn the results of the November 3rd election, playing host yesterday to the most conservative group of his Republican supporters in the House, in Congress. Trump met with far-right lawmakers yesterday to discuss their strategy for the key date of January 6th. On that date, Congress will take its final step in reaffirming Joe Biden's presidential victory. Trump allies hope at least one U.S. senator on that day, on January 6th, and one House member will object to Biden's win, forcing a debate and forcing a vote over election results. And that debate and vote would happen in Congress if you get one U.S. senator and one member of the House. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Rebecca Jones, the former Florida Department of Health data expert, is suing the state over a search warrant executed on her house in Tallahassee 2 weeks ago. The search came after investigators said they linked a message from a computer at her address that was sent to health department employees. Jones was fired in May for insubordination. She helped create the state's coronavirus dashboard. She contends she was fired for not falsifying data. Now, Jones posted a video of several armed officers from the FDLE entering her townhome. The video was widely shared on social media, and Jones was interviewed for an hour last week on WMNF on this show, so you can listen back to that entire interview. But now she's suing the state over the search of her townhome. Well, this is the deadliest year in U.S. history, with deaths topping 3 million for the first time. It's due mainly to the coronavirus pandemic that's killed nearly 320,000 Americans and counting. Final mortality data for this year will not be available for several months. But preliminary numbers suggest that the U.S. is on track to see more than 3.2 million deaths this year, at least 400,000 more than in 2019. That increase would be about 15%. As a percentage increase, that would mark the largest single-year jump since 1918. And Congressman James Clyburn, chair of the House Select Subcommittee on Coronavirus, says the U.S. needs a 9/11-style commission to investigate the Trump administration's response to the pandemic. Here's Clyburn. He was on MSNBC last night.
When you get people coming before your committee and saying that they were ordered to delete certain communications that they got, and then you find out later that somebody, in fact, maybe the same person in this instance, though we don't know exactly who gave the order, and that's why we're trying to get these documents. And now we've decided that they are not going to give us the information, so we issued the subpoenas this morning because we think the American people deserve to know. This is probably the worst healthcare crisis we've had in over 100 years. Nothing like this since 1918. And they are playing games with the American people. We deserve to know exactly what happened and who made it happen.
Congressman James Clyburn of South Carolina, a Democrat, who's calling for a 9/11-style commission to investigate President Trump's handling of the COVID crisis. What do you think? Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. I'm suggesting some news program or news stories, rather, that we could talk about. And let's take some calls from listeners. And I mentioned Barbara Fling is off today, so when you call, you just have to let it ring. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, this is Tim in Tampa.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about Michael Flynn. I'm a retired intelligence officer, and I don't think this guy understands that they can call him back on active duty and court-martial him for what he said. And I'm hoping this new administration, the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, calls him back to active duty and court-martial him, because that is very dangerous. The stuff this guy had access to, I used to work for Flynn, actually, and he was a nut job then. And I just can't believe a retired three-star general would say what he said. And they really need to deal with him.
Well, specifically, what did he say that you think they need to deal with?
Well, he said they should call the military to go into those states and call martial law against the United States citizens and do the elections over.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about yesterday. So,
exactly.
Tim, where did you work with General Flynn?
He was an intelligence officer up in Washington, D.C., and I worked for him for about a year and a half. And the funny thing about it, he ran DIA. I worked with him on the DIA as well. He ran, and Obama fired him.
Well,
he's a nut job.
You know, okay, you called him a nut job. So give us an example of why, in your experience, you thought he was a nut job back then.
Because we would do our reports, and we realized that President Obama was reporting just the opposite. So we had to backdoor him and give backdoor Flynn and let President Obama know, hey, what are you saying? Because that is not what's in the report.
And I see. So the frontline workers are reporting one thing.
Exactly.
Flynn changes it as he reports to the president?
Exactly. And that's when he would work for President Obama. And President Obama, that's when President Obama got rid of him, when he realized what he was doing.
Were you violating the chain of command by going around Flynn?
Well, it was my boss who violated him. But no, that's our responsibility as a frontline guy. If we're putting out a daily intel brief, and the president don't have time to go through that word for word. So he relied on his staffers, Flynn and the rest of them, to brief him on the important stuff. But if this guy's manipulating what he's briefing the president, that's a problem.
And is that why Flynn was fired by President Obama?
Exactly. That's exactly why he was fired by President Obama. And that's why President Obama told Trump not to hire this guy. And Trump did it anyway. And how long did he last? But the guy is not stable. I don't know what happened to him over the years. I don't know how he made 3-star, actually. But when he started working for DIA, there is a pattern behind this guy. And the thing they need to watch is his what we call a non-disclosure. What is this guy giving to foreign countries? Because we all signed that statement that you cannot disclose certain things. And even Trump must be what they call get read off once he leaves office. The thing is, what is he going to disclose to foreign entities? That's the stuff they need to be watching. Because Trump doesn't know boundaries.
Would you trust President Trump if in the future, as an ex-president, he had a meeting with somebody like, let's say, Vladimir Putin?
No. Matter of fact, they need to go back and get a commission and find out what was he saying to Vladimir Putin during those meetings, because he had an interpreter with him. Okay? He had an interpreter, and they need to subpoena that interpreter and say, what was this guy talking about in these meetings? You know, he can talk about executive privilege all he wants. This country doesn't belong to Trump. It belongs to the United States people. And we have no idea what he was saying in those meetings. That's a problem.
Mm. Do you think that were notes kept? I mean, typically, and I don't know if you know this, but were notes kept? If there's an interpreter who's there in a meeting between, let's say, two heads of state, are notes typically kept? And
There are always notes.
All right,
that's why you do not meet with heads of state without people there interpreting, taking notes, so you can go back and read it and so forth. Always. But this particular time, we don't know what happened when he had the one interpreter and Putin had his. We don't know if there were notes kept, but that interpreter knows what was said.
Yeah, so a subpoena could bring about what. Okay, Tim, thanks. That's a great call. Good information. Thank you. All right, bye-bye. 813-239-9663. I mentioned that Barbara Fling, our phone producer today, is under the weather. So we're doing things a little bit differently. You're just going to have to let the phone ring. And let's take another caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Gary from Largo.
Hi, Gary. What would you like to say?
You know, what I'd like to hear brought up is the fact that the stimulus package was passed last night, and our billionaire Senator Scott from Florida voted against it, along with Ron Johnson from Wisconsin and Rand Paul. So yeah. I think that's something to talk about in this state particularly, that our own state senator found it too costly to vote for.
All right, so that's exactly what he said. He said I don't have a statement in front of me, but he's worried about the federal deficit. So what would you say back to Senator Scott?
Well, for one thing, I'd say you might have worried about the federal deficit when you approved a large tax break for the rich, and we lost billions of dollars that would normally go into the national coffers. So I would just say that, now all of a sudden the Republican has got a conscience about spending money.
Yeah, I wonder how much Scott got out of that tax break that he voted for.
Yeah.
You know, there's
and anybody that's friends with him, let's put it that way, huh?
Yeah, there's a new study out, too, and I don't have it in front of me, but I will try to pull it up as we talk this morning. That shows that trickle-down economics, every time it's been tried in the past, has never worked. Money never accrues to people who are middle-income or lower-income. And I'll try to find study just came out, yeah. and you knew that, Gary, right?
Well, sure, that goes back to Reagan, you know, brought that in, and everybody thought that was a great plan, I guess. But as we have had years of seeing that, that didn't work out.
Yeah. Gary, thanks a lot. That's a good topic, and I'm glad you brought it up.
I just really want people in the state to know about their senator. And, you know, I just felt like it was a topic to bring up that he voted against that stimulus package last night.
All right, Gary, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for raising it. You're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Tampa. And I'm Rob Lurie. Thanks for tuning in. And we're I've suggested some news stories. There's a whole lot of news going on. I'm going to suggest a few more before we go back to the phones. A new report on racial disparities in the Air Force concludes that black service members in the service are far more likely to be investigated, arrested, face disciplinary actions, and be discharged for misconduct. The report by the Air Force Inspector General was released yesterday. It says black members of the Air Force and the Space Force are less likely to be promoted to higher enlisted and officer ranks, and one-third of them believe they don't get the same opportunities as their white peers. It concludes that racial disparity exists for black service members, but that the data doesn't explain why it happens. So that report just out yesterday. Last week, the federal government announced it was handing over the job of permitting protected wetlands for construction to Florida's state government. The DeSantis administration applauded the move, saying it would speed up the process of construction. Jenny Stalevich is reporting that environmentalists say the state is giving up an important protection for wetlands, that is the 1970s Clean Water Act. Let's listen to this report from one of our fellow public radio stations, WLRN.
The permitting process for wetlands was embedded in the landmark Clean Water Act because too many wetlands were being lost and causing pollution to worsen.
You know, with rivers catching on fire and everything else. And the Clean Water Act has been a testament to our nation's commitment to, like, valuing these resources.
Jason Tatoy is an attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity. He says under the feds, biologists have to evaluate the environmental consequences of building over wetlands and wider impacts, like if removing marshes that clean and filter water in one place will worsen drinking water in another. Only two other states, Michigan and New York, have taken over their own permitting. He says those states only have a couple of dozen endangered species. Florida has over 130.
And geographically, things are much different. We're a state that is just surrounded by water. Our listed species, we often have wetland-dependent species, so without wetlands, these species just wouldn't be found in Florida.
Before it fully assumes the permitting process, Florida will have to show that it can provide the same level of protection.
You have to ask yourself, why are so many species listed in the first place in Florida? And so much of it has been the result of habitat loss and degradation. That's the leading threat to species.
Like alligators and roseate spoonbills and indigo snakes. He says so far, Florida has not sufficiently explained how it will perform those duties. I'm Jenny Stiletovich in Miami.
All right. So if you're in construction, do you like this idea that the state is now in charge of regulating wetlands? Or if you're an environmentalist, do you see the problems? What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. I mentioned a moment ago the study that showed that trickle-down doesn't work. And I'm just going to – many publications have covered this, including Bloomberg and The Guardian. But The Hill covered it about 5 days ago, and I'll just read a sentence from it. The study says that reducing taxes on the rich lead to higher income inequality, concluded David Hope and Julian Lindbergh of the London School of Economics and Political Science. In contrast, such reforms do not have any significant effect on economic growth and unemployment. So the study found that trickle-down doesn't work. It was done by two scholars at the London School of Economics, if you want to look that up. And we probably should try to do a show about that, either us or Amy Goodman. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. Here's an email from somebody named Mr. C.M. Burke. And the email says, all you do is spread lies, false information, and BS, and you are a pathetic scumbag. So, and then they say, January 6th, you'll see, writes Mr. C.M. Burke. Thank you, C.M., for that. Mark and Brandon writes, I have so much respect for Daryl Rahsaan on Friday's Florida This Week. It was another great example of why. The way he sat there so patiently and quietly while the Republican farmer went on and yet still kept coming back coolly with facts. That's Mark from Brandon talking about Florida This Week that we played yesterday. Hey, thanks for listening to WMNF 88.5 FM. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hey, caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? You're going to have to turn down your radio because that's about 40 seconds behind.
Roland in Mulberry.
All right, Roland, thanks for calling. What would you like to comment about?
About General Flynn ain't the only one retired officer who's talking about secession from the because of the election.
Who else? What other military personnel are talking about martial law?
Yeah, we're talking about Lieutenant Colonel Allen West, who used to be the congressman in Florida. He's now the Republican Party chairman in Texas. He was talking about secession for the state. Because the Supreme Court wouldn't overturn the election.
Wow. So could he be brought up? Could he be brought back and court-martialed?
Yes, he can. He's just like General Flynn. Once you retire to the military, you become an inactive soldier, but you are subject to recall up to the age, I think, of like 80 years of age.
Well, who would initiate that?
It would probably be some kind of military tribunal to determine that something he did was detrimental to the Constitution or detrimental to the U.S. government.
All right, Roland, thanks for that. I didn't hear about West. I knew he'd moved to Texas, but I haven't heard anything from him. I'm glad you did.
Yes. He put this out right about 3 weeks ago when the Supreme Court turned down their request to overturn the election along with the Attorney Generals of Texas and the other Republican Hill states.
All right, Roland, thanks a lot. Thanks for that message.
You're welcome.
All right, good to hear from you. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? Caller, you got
to... Two callers.
I'm sorry, caller. What's your name?
This is Berkeley.
Berkeley?
Speaking of two comments, is that the bump, he does encourage everybody to wear or to take the vaccine.
Yeah. Caller, thanks a lot. Thanks for that. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello, Rob. It's Danny.
Hi, Danny. What would you like to say?
I'm in Tampa here. Yes, I'd like to say, Rob, isn't this, a friend of mine told me, isn't this like almost attempted sedition, what they're trying to do? The people, Trump and Giuliani and Sidney Powell and these people?
Many, many people have said that.
Yes, I believe that's true. You know, you can go ahead against the country, but I believe in the Constitution says you can't change. You can't go ahead and steal an election, you know. And then we're talking about Michael Flynn. Michael Flynn is definitely somebody who definitely would have, if he would have had a chance, would have started a war. There's no doubt about it. The guy is just completely crazy. I mean, you know, these people are crazy. And let me tell you something, Rob. The other day I saw Letitia James of a New York district there of New York, and she is ready. She is ready to go ahead. She wants Donald Trump very badly, and so does Cy Vance. And from what I understand, who knows? Maybe they may even serve him once he's trying to leave, okay? That'd be incredible. That's where I think he's going. I think he's going to prison. And, you know, I can only hope. And I believe, too, that he's just going to prison and, you know, I think what they're trying to do, Rob, is not going to work. And some of these people here, you know, Sidney Powell, they said that she was out of the you know, not the lawyer anymore. Now she's in there the last three or four days.
Yeah, CNN saw her coming out of the White House residence on Sunday night. She's the attorney that has some wild conspiracy beliefs, and
even Hugo Chavez. I mean, you know, Sunday night they, I don't know if you know this, but they reported they had one big meeting there, and they among the Trump people, and they were all telling them, listen, you can't do this, you know, and there was a lot of FUs and FU back, you know, like telling them, what are you crazy? I mean, just because, you know, you lost unless you're going to go ahead and call and try to get martial law and then seize voting machines. It's unreal, Rob. And this is the type of people that support Donald Trump. And Joe Biden, I believe, will be will be inaugurated on the 20th.
All right, Danny, thanks a lot. Thank you. Yeah, we talked about that meeting at the White House. There were several meetings at the White House, one on Friday and then one apparently on Sunday, in which topics like martial law, seizing voting machines were talked about. And that we got a lot of phone calls about that yesterday. Well, again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. People with private health insurance will see the shock of surprise medical bills virtually gone. That's thanks to the coronavirus compromise that was reached in Congress yesterday. The surprise bills can run from hundreds to tens of thousands of dollars coming from doctors and hospitals that are outside the network of a patient's private health insurance plan. It's estimated that one in five emergency visits and one in six inpatient admissions will trigger a surprise bill from a hospital or a doctor. Clothing stores and specialty retailers are offering big discounts in hopes of rescuing a lackluster holiday shopping season in which surging coronavirus cases have kept many shoppers at home. For some stores, it could be their last chance at survival. The holiday season, which typically accounts for about 20% of the retail industry's annual sales, has always been make or break for struggling stores. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Bigotry toward Asian Americans and Asian food has spread steadily alongside the coronavirus in the U.S. Distorted information about the virus has led to a revival of a 100-year-old trope about Asian food being dirty. Social media has been flooded with racist memes portraying Chinese people being responsible for spreading COVID-19. A coalition of advocacy groups said earlier this year it had received more than 2,500 reports of hate and discrimination against Asian Americans across the country. And vandals in Venice, Florida, just south of Sarasota, rearranged letters on a sign announcing the postponement of the Jewish Food Festival in Venice, prompting a strong reaction from the rabbi of the Jewish congregation of Venice. The rabbi said, "I'm angered by this act of vandalism against our congregation." Rabbi Ben Shul said of the incident, which took place the night of December 14th, after a portable sign announcing the postponement was placed outside the center off Auburn Road, he said, "We will not let such cowardly acts of hatred cause us to back away from living proudly as Jews and active members of the larger Venice community." And some words were rearranged on the sign that were turned the sign into an anti-Semitic sign. And in July, two synagogues in Sarasota were vandalized with anti-Semitic graffiti, with the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office charging a suspect shortly thereafter. So problems in the Venice, Sarasota area. Historian Timothy Snyder was on Mehdi Hasan's Peacock, NBC Peacock show, explaining President Trump's authoritarian tendencies and how they could impact America's global standing for years to come. We're going to listen to that interview right now. And this was from just about a week ago on the Peacock TV channel. Here's Timothy Snyder, who's a professor and has been looking at authoritarian movements.
After 20 years spent studying the atrocities of the 20th century, the Yale history professor literally wrote the book On Tyranny when Donald Trump was elected president, appropriately titled On Tyranny. Since then, Snyder has become a rare American public intellectual, guiding readers on how to recognize and resist authoritarianism. His work took an unexpected turn late last year after a misdiagnosed near-fatal illness gave him a first-hand look at the American healthcare system, too. That experience and the Trump administration's bungling of the coronavirus epidemic led Snyder to write Our Malady, an urgent call to rethink healthcare and freedom. After the election last month, Snyder warned in the Boston Globe that Trump's lies about election fraud would take Republicans and the country on a journey towards violence. Quote, "If you convince your voters that the other side has cheated, you are promising them that you yourself will cheat next time. Having bent the rules, you then have to break them." Since then, of course, the Electoral College has confirmed Joe Biden as the president-elect, and Mitch McConnell has congratulated Biden on his win. Though the president and his most hardcore supporters continue to deny that reality. Trump tweeting today, quote, "Tremendous evidence pouring in on voter fraud. There has never been anything like this in our country." Well, that second sentence is certainly true, though not in the way Trump means. So where is all this headed now? Joining me now is Yale University history professor Timothy Snyder. Thank you so much for coming on the show. What is the state of American democracy today, 6 weeks after the election?
Well, it wasn't good before Trump. It got worse during Trump. And I think what we're going to look at now is what it's going to be like after Trump. Because if we know anything about the man, we know that he's stubborn. He doesn't give up. He doesn't change his mind. He ran against the Republican Party in 2016. There's no reason why he won't run against the Republican Party after 2020. So I think what we're in for is a long run in American politics where a big lie about the election, a conspiracy theory, as you rightly said, about the election, becomes a force which remains inside our society, and that the Republican Party and all the rest of us are going to have to deal with that.
Yeah, we are going to have to deal with that, and it's going to be with us for a while, I think. You're right about that. Timothy, what do you say to critics of the autocracy thesis who say, look, Biden is going to be sworn in, the institution's held, Trump is just a loudmouth who was never really a fascist or bent on holding on to power with actual violence?
Well, I think the institution's held is a really bad argument. The institution's barely held, first of all. I mean, if at the end of the day you're counting on 9 unelected people who wear funny clothes to save you, that's not really a healthy democracy. If at the end of the day you're glad because the military decided in June it wasn't going to intervene on the side of the president, if what you're counting on are, you know, local Republicans not signing off on ballots, these are the things that we were forced to pay attention to. It was much closer than we would like for it to have been. And we had a leader who pushed and who was going to continue to push for the idea that votes should not count. So we're treading water. We're not swimming. Whether we're going to go down or not, I think, remains to be seen. I think what we can treat the Trump administration as, though, as a kind of warning. We can ask ourselves, why didn't checks and balances work very well? We can ask ourselves, why do we have such poor local news? We can ask ourselves, how can it be that so many people believe things that aren't true, and work on those problems? I think that's the way forward.
So you say the Trump administration serves as a warning. Political science professor Corey Robin said earlier this month that Trump turned out to be a weak leader with many constraints on him and not an authoritarian, adding, quote, the comparisons between Trump and Hitler or Mussolini come from people who only began thinking about American conservatism in the Republican Party when Trump came along. What do you say to him and to others who argue that Trump's imminent departure from the White House proves talk about coups and purges was overblown and that Trump was much more symptom of the Republican Party than a cause of anything new?
Well, I think the point about this arising from deeper places in American history and being related to the Republican Party is true. I mean, I was saying radical and publishable things about the Republican Party and its policies going all the way back to the Iraq War, which is a kind of founding American disaster. I think it's quite right that there are deeper problems in the United States, such as racism and inequality of wealth, especially inequality of access to factuality, which make a figure like Mr. Trump possible. I agree with the argument which says we have deep structural problems, not just in the political system, but in the society, which we have to solve if we don't want another kind of Trump. That said, you've got to give credit where credit is due. The man does have a certain kind of talent. The man has actually tried to carry out a coup. The fact that the coup didn't succeed does not mean that all is well. Where we are now is we're living in a society where tens of millions of people are going to believe that their votes aren't counted. And it's a perverse kind of wrong belief, because the people who really should worry about their votes being counted are, of course, people of color. And the whole history of the United States is now being turned around. So as Trump himself said in Georgia, basically, it's now white people who should worry that their votes are being counted. Trump says to the white people, you are the victims, right? You're the real victims. And that big lie, that cult of victimhood, that is dangerous. And of course, you don't want to go to the Hitler well all the time. But the whole history of the 20th century, from the Nazi stab in the back myth forward, tells you that it's dangerous when the people who are really powerful claim that they are the real victims.
That's such a good point. The stab in the back myth is an interesting analogy for what's coming down the line with the election was stolen, we'll hear, for many years. I asked Jonathan Swan of Axios this question at the start of the show. I asked him journalistically, but I think it's a question for all of us. How do you engage with an American political system in which one of the two parties is now openly anti-democratic? Two-thirds of House GOP members signed on to that ridiculous Texas lawsuit last week. How do you deal with that? Can we cope with that? Are we ready to comprehend with that pretty depressing reality?
I mean, I think you just have to broaden out a lot. I mean, I think a lot of the problem with the coverage in 2015, 2016, 2017 is that people just kind of wrote down what Trump said. You need to broaden out. This is why, going back to another question, this is why we need history. I mean, it's not that this is just like other authoritarian coup or like other authoritarian leaders or other authoritarian regimes. But if you dismiss all the comparisons, you don't have the concepts, you can't see the patterns, you don't know what's right and what's wrong. So I think we have to broaden out historically, broaden out conceptually, and accept that America is a normal country. And that all the things that we've learned about political behavior, all the things we've learned about the difficulty of democracy, because democracy is hard. It doesn't come naturally, and we're no better than anybody else at it. All these things that we've learned from the 20th century, we can apply. So getting out of American exceptionalism, I think, is really important. Accepting that figures like Mr. Trump, you know, these oligarchs and wannabe oligarchs who create spectacles, that's totally normal 21st century politics. The idea that you need elections not to count the votes, but as a kind of ritual of support, that's totally normal 21st century politics. So I think if we just expand historically and expand geographically, we can understand this phenomenon. And we're going to have it going forward. Mr. Trump is going to keep claiming that he won the election. Yeah. I mean, so long as he's alive, so long as he's not in prison or in Russia, he's going to keep saying this.
So mentioned Russia, you mentioned oligarchs, you mentioned broadening it out. Over the summer, you compared Trump to Alexander Lukashenko, the Putin-supported strongman president of Belarus. Your recent book, The Road to Unfreedom, deals with the influence of Russia, and you've given a series of kind of lectures and YouTube chats and interviews about Russian interference in the 2016 election. And yet this time around, there was no real evidence of major Russian interference on Trump's behalf in this election. And Putin even congratulated Joe Biden today before most congressional Republicans have done.
Well, he congratulated Biden on an interesting day. He congratulated Biden on the same day when the major American media were breaking the story of a long-term successful Russian cyber attack on major American federal government institutions as well as major American private companies. So, I mean, I think there might have been a little bit of a smile there. And of course, when Trump won, he called Putin to be congratulated. When Biden won, Putin waited more than a month to call him. But I take your point. I think the Russians weren't doing the same kinds of things this time around as last time around. But boy, did they get an awful lot out of Trump being president for 4 years. I mean, basically, Trump managed, maybe American decline was inevitable, but he managed to pack about 40 years of American decline into 4 years. And that has been such an enormous boon for the Russians. And I suspect that these stories that we're starting to read now about successful Russian cyber war inside U.S. institutions, that this is just the tip of the iceberg, and that we're going to keep reading these kind of retrospective stories about the Trump administration for some time to come.
And one last question then, we're almost out of time. How optimistic are you about the future, given your analysis of the recent past?
I'll tell you what I am. I am hopeful, and here's why. Because what we are learning, and this is a positive spin on your other question, is that we're not so special. I mean, we have problems that are similar to other people's problems, which means you can learn from other people. And the interesting thing is people like democracy. I mean, if you look at Slovakia in 2018, you look at Belarus now. I mean, I was talking to a colleague yesterday, a Belarusian colleague, who went back to Belarus knowing that he can't leave the country, knowing that he's probably going to prison. I have friends and colleagues in Belarus who are going in and out of prison. Why? Just for democracy, for nothing else. And that's the thing that you can learn, that democracy doesn't come to you because of the free market. It doesn't come to you because you're American. You have to care about it. Democracy means the people ruling. Yeah. If you want to rule, then you got to rule.
Yeah.
And that's something that we can learn. And I think a lot of Americans did learn it. And that I see that as hopeful and positive.
That's Timothy Snyder, who's a history professor at Yale University. He's the author of several books, including On Tyranny. And you heard him warn there that keeping our democracy is not a given. It's not a sure thing. We're not different than any other country that we could fall from our democratic principles. He's written a lot about the slide toward fascism. That was an interview he did with Mehdi Hasan on Peacock, and you can see that online. One of the professor's points is that Trump has energized the far right in this country, which is not democratic. And let's talk about what happened yesterday in Portland, Oregon. State police there declared an unlawful assembly at Oregon's state capitol building in Salem, Oregon, as right-wing protesters attempted to force their way into a special session of the legislature, with some demonstrators carrying guns and attacking people with chemical spray. Let's listen into a report from KOIN, which is the CBS affiliate there in Oregon, in Salem.
A siege in Salem and far-right protesters try to storm the Capitol as lawmakers work on COVID relief for them and other Oregonians. Police fending off the intruders who slowed the work going on inside. This is Queen 6 News at 6. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Elizabeth Dinn.
And I'm Wayne Haverly. Jeff has the night off. Now, during the protest at the Capitol today, Oregon State Police arrested two people, including Ryan Lyles. He now faces charges of trespassing and assaulting a police officer. State police say they were sprayed with chemical agents on two occasions today.
Meanwhile, inside, legislators working during this special session on protections and assistance to help Oregonians survive the pandemic. Our Lindsay Nadrich has been tweeting updates from inside the Capitol building all day. She joins us there now live with the very latest on the relief talks and the protests that happened just outside, Lindsay.
Well, guys, the Capitol building was closed to the public today, so protesters were outside for most of the day as inside legislators in both the House and Senate voted on much-needed pandemic relief.
This is an unlawful assembly. It is not.
Oregon State Police closed off the street as the group marched up and down the block, waving Trump flags and chanting things like USA. Protesters also tried to break into the Capitol building at least twice. The group was able to get inside once this morning, and police say troopers were sprayed with bear spray. Two people were arrested during that incident. We also watched another protester in a gas mask get arrested outside the building after he approached a side door. Then around 1:30, two protesters broke one of the glass doors on the west side of the building. One person was arrested. Police are still looking for the second. OSP made several announcements on the loudspeaker declaring the protest an unlawful assembly and told people to leave, but they haven't yet.
Well, that was yesterday in Oregon. You can see the entire report at the KOIN-TV's website. Right-wing protesters trying to shut down the state legislature in Salem, Oregon, something that's been very little covered outside of Oregon. We just heard from Timothy Snyder, the professor, saying that President Trump has energized the far right in this country, the far right being an undemocratic movement. What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Jeff writes in to say, I'm glad they got the stimulus package passed, but I think $600 is a little low considering all the hardship people are facing. They should provide more. What do you think? Yeah, that $600 goes to anybody that makes $75,000 a year or less. If you make more than that, you don't get it. And, of course, $600 doesn't go far. If you're making $50,000 a year, $600 disappears in kind of a blink of the eye. Let's take some more phone calls. Caller, you're on the air on Radioactivity. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hi, caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling
from? Hey, y'all, that call now, Trump wants people to take the vaccine. And if you can look it up,
Operation Caller, what's your name?
Warp Speed.
Caller, what's your name?
Operation Warp Speed, and they released the restrictions for the mask, even though they have them on the storefront door. You can go in there and not expect to be ticketed.
All right, caller, what's your name?
The mask.
All right. Caller, what's your name and where are you calling from? Thank you for calling in.
This is George from Ybor City.
Hi, George. What would you like to say?
I wanted to comment on the author.
On Timothy Snyder?
Yeah, he was okay. Talking about how the Russians didn't hack our election. They were very busy trying to hack our election, but we spent all summer securing the voting machines. And also what we did was we set a honey trap for the Russians, letting them think that they were going to hack. And I know this because I worked at Cyber Command. We set a honey trap for them, and then we thwarted them. And they were waiting for the attack. But I think what might have happened is our honey trap became their honey trap, because while we were busy securing our election, they were setting up that gigantic government hack that they did just recently.
And George, you work for Cyber Command?
I did. I was on active duty military tour.
And when you say honey trap, tell us what does that mean?
A honey trap is where you're protecting your network and you leave some bait purposely. So when they come into your network, they think they've got the goods. When it's really a setup, it's like a mouse trap,
mm-hmm.
given the intruders.
And when they grab the cheese, they're exposed.
Yeah, you can decide if you want to expose them or not. The hunter is being hunted.
So they did try, but you guys were prepared. You're saying.
Yeah, Chris Krebs, the guy that Trump fired, he spent all summer going out to all the districts and all around the country securing the machines for this to happen. They were waiting for the Russians to do this. They knew the Russians were going to do this. And the Russians knew we knew, and it was a little game. And we let the Russians were going to use a giant botnet. And we let them build the botnet, and then we killed the botnet at the last minute.
Wow. George, thanks a lot. I wish somebody officially could talk about that. That's a great story. George, thanks a lot.
It goes on all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. I wish somebody from the inside could speak officially tell us. Okay, all right. George, thanks a lot. Thanks for spilling the beans. I hope the Russians aren't listening. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Charles from Tampa.
Hi, Charles. What would you like to say?
Well, I just wanted to say that listening to the gentleman who was interviewed from Yale, the three points I take away from that that are just so pertinent is this victimization culture that Trump has been very good at articulating and getting people to believe. Secondly, American exceptionalism does not mean we are excluded from or immune to what everybody else in the world goes through. And thirdly, that this is a process where we're learning that we can learn from others, that we can't be so arrogant that we think our thoughts are always above others and ascendant, but that we have to learn, like the rest of humanity, that democracy comes with a price.
Yeah, and I thought Snyder's point about voter suppression in Georgia, it's black people who've been the target of voter suppression in Georgia, and Trump is making white people feel like they're the victims in Georgia.
Absolutely. Is this akin to Animal Farm? Is that kind of that concept? We say that up is down and down is up kind of thing?
Yeah, sort of like 1984. All right, Charles, thank you.
1984, okay.
Thank you. Bye. Great to hear from you. We've got an open line, 813-239-9663, or you can send an email into the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Jim, and I'm calling from Tampa, Rob.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Hey, Rob. I listened to Danny yesterday, and let me tell you something. You know, and you must be friends or you know the guy, because, you know, otherwise, well, I guess everybody gets on, don't you, Rob, like the first guy that called. But Danny is the problem, and Danny doesn't see it. The elections have been held. Every court in the nation has turned them down. They keep coming up with this baloney. Danny's got to give up one day, Rob.
Well, Danny's. I think on your side. He thinks the elections were fair and square, and that Biden won.
No, I thought that Danny was saying yesterday that he was the GOP guy, and he said you have to go. With everything that you've got, and you've got to keep going to the courts. Well, the courts are over, And these people got to give it up.
Yeah, you know, I didn't hear a Danny call yesterday saying that. We did have Danny call today.
Yeah, Danny, it was yesterday. The you were talking to the Democratic guy, and you were talking to the Republican guy. Am I a couple of
days off here? Okay, so you're talking about, I got you now. I do a TV program called Florida This Week, and we play the sound from it back on Mondays at 11 o'clock. And Danny Kirschmer from Hillsborough County was suggesting, that the election was stolen. Okay, I got you.
All right, yeah, so they got to give it up because this is ruining the country. This is ruining democracy. And I got a funny feeling that when that secret meeting that Trump took with Putin that wouldn't let anybody else in there, I think that was a playbook. And they're doing it really well.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. I got Danny's confused. We've got so many Danny's. We had a caller, Danny, today, one of our regular callers. And here's an email from a different Danny, I'm pretty sure. This Danny says, while it is alarming that General Flynn has called for martial law, it is equally alarming that Flynn's presence at the December 12th MAGA rally in D.C. to extend his support to SPLC-designated hate groups such as the Proud Boys. I believe Unicorn Riot exposed this, writes Danny. So I read his email. I hope you understand it. I'm not sure I understood everything in there, but Danny, thank you for that. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, forget 1980.
No, caller, you know, this is a caller who calls about 100 times a day to WMNF and uses a different voice every time he calls. And his name is Levi. Levi, please don't call again, okay? 813-239-9663. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Ben, Tampa. I bet you ain't got a lot of Bens calling in.
You're the first one today. Ben, what would you like to say?
The election. As soon as Benjamin Netanyahu came out and said he could work with Biden, it was over.
And why do you say that? What's the significance of that? Why do you bring that up?
At that point, the decision was made. The deal was done. And everything else has been show since then.
Okay, so why would you say that, though?
Because if Benjamin Netanyahu could say he can get along with Biden, that was really the final word. If he really wanted Trump for Israel to still be there for Israel, he'd have said, I'm going to wait and see how this works out.
Yeah. All right. Ben, thanks a lot. I'm not sure what your point is. I have my fears about what your point is, but I'm not going to go there. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Revelation, chapter 13.
Okay, there's Levi again. Levi does not give up. He's got a lot of free time, and he just calls, and thank you for your call. It doesn't make any sense. It never does. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I will play your comments tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Your hero, Mark Bureau, is coming up next right here on 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. And Mark is going to be talking about Christmas. I'm sure he's going to start with the Christmas segment. So stick around. He always does a great show at Christmas. And this is 88.5 FM, WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg. I'm Rob Lori, and unfortunately, Barbara Fling was not here today. She's feeling under the weather. Barbara, we hope you feel better soon, and hope that you return to us because we really need you to screen out calls from people like Levi, who call every second that they can. We're going to go out with some music from The Temptations. This is 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa.
A bunch of efforts, and said Mitch McConnell was terrible. She then walked that back, so you can see the sort of divide between the younger members of the team who came of age during just...
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house,
that a creature was stirring. Not even a mouse.
In my mind, I want you to be free. For all of our friends, would you listen to me? Now hear what I say.